Spenden bitte. Der Podcast zu Wissenschaft und nachhaltigen Transformationen.
Hallo zurück zu Wenden bitte. Ich begrüße euch wieder sehr herzlich zu einer dritten und letzten Sonderfolge. Mein Name ist Mandy Schossig vom Öko-Institut. Unser drittes Online-Forum zur Circular Economy hat am 25. September stattgefunden. Das Thema war der Textilsektor, denn die Produktion unserer Kleidung geht ja sehr stark auf Kosten von Menschen und Natur. Es gibt viele Probleme in dem Bereich, schlechte Arbeitsbedingungen, schädliche Chemikalien bei der Verarbeitung der Produkte, lange Lieferwege, kurze Haltbarkeit der Stoffe. Und dann kommt da natürlich auch unser eigenes Konsumverhalten dazu, denn ein T-Shirt für 5 €, das nach 2-mal Tragen im Müll landet, das ist natürlich ganz und gar nicht im Sinne einer Circular Economy. In dieser Session hört ihr von Valerie Beuthen von der Ellen MacArthur Foundation und von Katja Moch vom Öko-Institut, wie sich der Textilsektor zirkulär umgestalten lässt. Danach gibt es einzelne Snapshots von internationalen ExpertInnen zum Textilsektor in ihren Ländern. Wir starten mit Valerie Beuthen von der Ellen MacArthur Foundation mit einem Input zur Relevanz von EPR, also Extended Producer Responsibility oder auf Deutsch auch erweiterte Herstellerverantwortung. Dieses Online-Forum haben wir in englischer Sprache durchgeführt, deshalb geht es jetzt hier auf Englisch weiter. So, have fun und viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Building a circular economy for us means breaking away from our current dominant model, our current global economy based on the take, make and waste model. And for textiles, what that looks like, and especially in the EU context where I am based, we're looking at figures of 12 million tons of textiles placed on our EU market every year. We're also looking at a figure of 8 million tons of textiles, perhaps even more than that, ending up in landfill or incineration every year in the EU. So compare these two figures and you'll get a sense of the linearity of the current textile system in Europe, but actually in many cases also globally. And perhaps even more striking, quite a significant amount of our products isn't even used in the first place. 4 to 9% of textile products in Europe are estimated to end up destroyed before they've ever been used, not even once in Europe. Our vision is that of a circular economy for fashion, and to contextualize that, in a circular economy, we use our products more, first and foremost. We use them to the maximum extent, and we only recycle them after maximum use. We also design our products differently. We design them so they can be taken apart, so we can recover the components, materials, we can recycle them at scale. And they're made from inputs that are safe, safe for us, for our health as humans, safe for the environment. And very crucially, they're made from inputs that are either recycled or coming from renewable sources. So moving away from virgin fossil-based material inputs across the fashion system. Now, circular economy and circular economy policy is firmly on the map when it comes to textiles and fashion. We have seen numerous roadmaps and strategies being developed over the past years. Targets are being set on things like reuse and recycling, on collection rates and so on. And these targets are set both by governments as well as businesses. But we believe there's a lot more work that remains to be done. And as the foundation, we think policy action, but also business action, should really focus on three main areas going forward. And that is the design of products, it's the business model, and finally, the infrastructure. Looking at design, we worked a lot on jeans, and we saw that actually most jeans produced today, conventional jeans, are not designed with the circular economy in mind. They're not designed for durability. They're not designed for recyclability. And actually, if you're wearing jeans today, I actually invite you to have a look and see if you can spot any of these rivets or these metal buttons around your pockets. That's actually design that runs counter to circular practices, because it's very hard to remove that button that's only there for aesthetic purposes, and it simply makes the jeans non-dismantlable and non-recyclable. So that's just one example where we believe policymakers have a crucial role to play in building more of a common approach, ideally a mandatory approach in how we design our products and ensure they're actually fit for a circular economy. the business model that's really at the heart of the transition to a circular economy. We need to grow business models that rely not just on the single use and the single sale of a product, but that rely on the repeated use of a product. So those are business models like reuse, repair, rental, and so on. And what they do quite fundamentally is that these models break the link that we have today between revenue and the consumption of resources. They manage to achieve decoupling. They manage to make money without having to necessarily make new products. And that's really key. And that's sort of the crucial metric, if you want, for a circular economy. And we invite policymakers to look quite carefully into the policy measures required to scale these circular business models, be it fiscal, economic, or also waste policy measures. What happens to our textiles when they become waste, when we decide to get rid of them and discard them? What we're seeing today is that the systems that we have for collection and sorting used textiles, they're not performing very well. If we look at the EU, where we have on average 16 kilograms of textiles discarded by EU citizens, across the EU, we only manage to collect 12% on average of that volume of discarded textiles. That's a relatively poor performance. We don't manage to collect our used textiles at great scale. We don't manage to sort them and bring them back in use, bring them back into circulation. The main reason for that is an economic reason. There is simply no viable business case today, if you want, for the collection of used textiles. Where there is a profit to be made or there's a positive operating margin for sorters, that's in the reusable fraction. That's the fraction of reusable clothing. But actually other textiles, that may be your t-shirt that's worn out, or it may be your kitchen towel, for example, there is simply no viable case today. It costs more to collect that product, bring it back into circulation than the revenues that you'll ever make from doing that. So there is a net cost associated with collecting used textiles today, and any collection scheme today faces that net cost. So we need policies that can help cover that cost in a structural way and can help ensure that textiles stay out of the waste stream and, of course, also out of the environment. And interestingly, what we found in our work on EPR, and this is taken from a study we published in June, is that that economic reality is actually true around the globe. Sorters are struggling everywhere in the world, be it in Europe, Kenya, India, but also in places like the US, because the economics currently do not stack up. And we need policy intervention on that level. EPR is a key policy measure to make those economics work, to generate a dedicated stream of funding for the collectors and sorters, and to make sure we have a system up and running that can capture our textiles when they become used. If we do not see EPR policy rolled out across the world, it is actually very unlikely that our collection and sorting systems will ever scale in a meaningful way, and we'll only see more textiles leaking out of the system, ending up in landfills, in the environment at times, or in incineration. So as I said, EPR provides funding, and that's why it's so crucial. It helps make the economics work for collection and sorting. But we believe it's such an important policy measure for a few other reasons as well, because EPR helps to create an environment in which investments are made, money is put on the table to finance reuse and recycling at scale. But also because EPR, when it is mandatory, when it is policy-led, it commits producers to report on what they place on the market, but also what happens to these products after use. So that's a huge step towards more transparency and traceability. And finally, because of its nature as a policy tool, because it commits the entire industry equally, EPR creates a movement. It creates collective action. It creates targets that everyone needs to work towards on the level of reuse, recycling, collection, and so forth. And that is very crucial in an industry that we know is very fragmented, that's going in different directions, and that tends to call things differently, measure them differently, and report on them differently. Unsurprisingly, we're seeing global momentum for EPR. EPR will look different from one country to the next. There is no policy that will look the same in every country around the world. The baseline in terms of how we consume, how we discard, how we collect and reuse, that baseline simply looks very different. So we also need to have a conversation around the contextual implementation of EPR policy. Finally, we do want to acknowledge that EPR isn't exactly a circular economy policy measure. We have to admit that EPR was never designed to boost the circular economy. It was always designed as a waste management tool. And historically, it's always focused on collecting more, recycling more. But we believe there's a huge opportunity here. EPR can do so much more. It can really boost the remit that it currently has. And it can do so much more to build a circular economy for textiles, to stimulate the design, stimulate the transition in the business models, as I described, but also to stimulate global collaboration.
Weiter geht es mit Katja Moch vom Öko-Institut, die in ihrem Input einen Überblick zu weiteren Regulierungen im Textilsektor gibt.
It all started with the EU strategy for sustainable and circular textiles. And literally, the term boosting reuse was used in the EU textile strategy. And then there were key actions announced with important reference to reuse. These are the mandatory eco-design requirements for textiles. Then the prohibition of the destruction of unsold apparel and footwear and also return products. And then the extended producer responsibility. And then under a section in the EU textile strategy on sustainable textile value chains globally, there was also the export of textile waste addressed. So all this led into three legislative initiatives, starting with the Eco-Design for Sustainable Products Regulation that was published in June this year and now already entered into force. It is important to know that this is a framework legislation with the aim of making sustainable products the norm in the EU. And so the Commission is empowered by the regulation to adopt product-specific eco-design requirements and publish them in so-called delegated acts. And textiles are expected to be one of the first product groups under the ESPR, if not the first product group. The European Joint Research Centre is already working on the preparatory study and already published one first milestone report. Eco-design requirements should improve the product aspects relevant for the specific product group. The product aspects are listed in the Article 5. And here, with regards to reuse, the product aspect is called reusability in the ESPR. For textiles, especially durability, but also repairability are relevant to determine also the possibility of reuse of textiles. And in the ESPR, directly the ban on the destruction of unsold apparel and footwear was taken up and will apply from July 2026 on. The second legislative initiative is the Waste Framework Directive and the EPR. According to the overall Waste Framework Directive in force, already the separate collection of textiles is set up and has to take place by 1st January 2025 on. And then the targeted revision of the Waste Framework Directive is still under negotiation in trilogue between Commission, Council and Parliament. And the targeted revision basically targets textile waste and also food waste. And for textile waste, it gives a wide liberty on how to set up national EPR schemes. So basically also under the European Waste Framework Directive, EPR schemes within Europe will very probably be quite different. And overall, no quantitative collection target is given. The potential timeline for the adoption and entering into force of this targeted revision of the Waste Framework Directive will also need, let's say, some more time. The expected adoption might be for beginning of next year. And then there are transition phases for the transposition into national law of this directive. And then still a transition period to establish a EPR scheme in each member state. And the European Commission proposed 30-month transition period to establish the EPR scheme, but the Council rather proposed a shorter transition period. So we still not know how far this could be implemented within the member states. The last legislative initiative I would like to propose to you is the regulation on shipment of waste. This new regulation have come into force by May this year. And the overall objective was not to export the waste challenge into third countries and also to prevent illegal waste exports. And generally, this general ban on the export of waste to non-OECD countries, for this provision, a transition period of 3 years was given. So this is also shown in the timeline on the very right, because the current flow for textiles takes place also to non-OECD country, and to allow an adaptation to those countries, a transition period of 3 years was given. Now I come to my conclusion. They're all drivers for reuse. However, we see the need for further prerequisites, and we also listed potential risks. So, for example, for the Waste Framework Directive and the mandatory separate collection, which will take part from January next year on, we see an important prerequisite in the availability of sorting, because careful sorting leads to a high reuse rate. And basically, the risk we see is that there will be lacking sorting capacities for the expected increased flow of textile waste due to the separate collection. For the Waste Framework Directive and the EPR, we see the need for quantitative reuse targets so that a comparable quality of sorting is applied throughout the EU and that there are not found very much differences. However, we see that there is limited reuse in the EU, so there has a careful decision to take what to do with other sorted textiles able to be reused and where to export it, to which countries and under which conditions. The ESPR minimum requirements for textiles, we see as a need for a strong consensus for strong requirements, because the ESPR requirements, it will be a kind of consensus EU-wide on what can be applied to the textiles economic operators. And we see at a risk, if there are not strong eco-design requirements for textiles, that there is a too small steering effect towards a reduction of fast fashion. The waste shipment regulation is also a clear driver for reuse, because textile waste needs to be sorted prior to export. But we see the need that a clear distinction, that the distinction is clear between used products and waste, respectively end of waste criteria for textiles. This is basically covered by an initiative of the Joint Research Center, but which is not finished so far. And for the waste shipment regulation, through the transition period of 3 years, we see the risk of excluding certain countries which are currently sorting textile waste and also exploring recycling possibilities. So I come here to my outlook. We expect substantial changes in the EU sorting sector due to increasing amounts of textile waste. We are of the opinion that it's still unclear how the ratio between EU reuse and export for reuse, how this will evolve. And we see the need for more international exchange.
Die folgenden Snapshots sollen euch eine internationale Perspektive geben. Zuerst hört ihr Oliver Boashi, Special Advisor des Umweltministers von Ghana. Dr. Reva Prakash arbeitet bei der Deutschen Gesellschaft für internationale Zusammenarbeit, GIZ, in Indien und berichtet dort über nachhaltige Bemühungen im Textilsektor. Ruben Goldstein von der National Business Association of Colombia gibt einen Einblick in den Textilsektor in Kolumbien. Dace Akule ist Expertin für nachhaltige Textilien bei der Green Liberty, einer NGO in Lettland.
As you know, fashion and textiles has been identified as a major sector with opportunities to transition Africa to a circular economy model based on its circularity potential. A major impact of the fast fashion industry has been the large influx of secondhand clothing in Africa, which has led to increasing amounts of unsold secondhand clothing that end up in landfills and water bodies across the continent, largely because most countries have no formal collection and recycling facilities. While recognizing the fact that reviving the textile and apparel value chain in a circular economic framework is quite new on the global stage, we believe that a country like Ghana is well positioned to become a leader in the global market. Secondhand clothing is largely generated in Europe and North America, then imported by Ghana and other African countries. In 2021, for example, imports of secondhand clothing into Ghana was valued at around $220 million, making Ghana the largest importer of used clothing in the world. It is estimated that about 40% of these imports are currently being dumped in landfills, which could be reusable for a value of close to $90 million. The lack of investment, skills training, and planning for recycling pathways are key impediments to reaching this potential. So, in light of the above, Ghana's Circular Economy Roadmap and Action Plan has identified textiles as a priority sector. We believe that integrating circular economy into the textiles and apparel value chain has potential to contribute an increase of about 1.9% in euro terms, about 1.9 billion euros into Ghana's national GDP by 2030. Currently, Ghana's textiles industry comprises vertically integrated mills and traditional textile manufacturing firms in spinning, hand weaving, and fabric processing. The industry emphasizes the production of high-quality made-in-Ghana fabrics, with a particular focus on niche markets, notably the U.S. Mills, weavers, batik, and tie-and-dye manufacturers predominantly utilize cotton cultivated in the northern regions of Ghana as their primary raw materials. Now, with over 40,000 members, the National Tailors and Dressmakers Association play a very significant role, annually providing training to more than 600,000 apprentices. We believe that Ghana can become a regional standout by embracing circular principles, prioritizing material reuse, and minimizing environmental impact throughout the life cycle of textiles and apparel products. This aligns with global initiatives to create an environmentally friendly and economically sustainable textiles sector. The Textiles and Garments Manufacturing Policy of Ghana seeks to strengthen the industry's value chain, fostering industrialization, export diversification, and significant job creation, particularly for youth and women, with a target of reaching a value of about $2 billion within the next decade. The policy aims to generate around 150,000 direct and indirect jobs, positioning Ghana as a leading global production and sourcing hub for textiles and garments. Now, to achieve this, an investment of close to $1.2 billion in factories and industrial park infrastructure is deemed very essential. Now, while in the process of developing this policy, Ghana is also implementing a project known as the Circularity and Sustainability in the Textile and Apparel Value Chain. The goal of the project is to position Ghana as a global leader in sustainable textile practices and to support the government of Ghana's efforts in revitalizing the textiles industry using circularity and sustainability methodologies while creating employment opportunities. The project will conduct two separate feasibility studies and identify at least two investable projects within the textiles and apparel value chain, and also promote investment in those bankable projects through business plan development, capacity building, and investment forums.
India is actually one of the largest producers of textiles and garment. And it's actually, in 2023, it was the sixth largest exporter of textiles spanning apparel, home and technical products. And domestically also, the textile industry is very crucial because it contributes around 2.3% to the country's GDP, 13% to the industrial production, and around 10 to 12% to export earnings. And it has around 45 million workers, including 3.5 million handloom workers, of which, of the total workers, around 60% of these are women. So for India, this the textile circularity is not just a sustainability issue, but it is also a feminist issue because a lot of women work in lower paid jobs in the sector. And talking about the end of life, so textile waste actually contributes to, is the third largest source of municipal solid waste. There is actually 7,800 kilotons of textile waste produced annually, of which the largest share comes from Indian consumers, which is 51%. 42% comes from factory waste and offcuts, and 7% is imported. And some estimates also suggest that over 60% of the new fabrics that are made today are actually made of synthetic fibers and plastics. And many experts also feel domestically that polyester is actually here to stay, as natural fabrics might not be able to meet the ever-increasing demands for textiles. Also, importantly, India has the ambition to become the global manufacturing hub by 2030, and it has a target of achieving 100 billion in textile export. However, there is also obviously an appreciation of the evolving landscape of international regulation and compliances, including in the EU. So there you also hear a lot of conversations around the sustainable products, what was just also presented earlier, and also not just in the textile, but also in the other industries, the carbon border adjustment mechanism is something that industry is very keen to understand. However, something that is to be noted in case of India is that a large part of our industry is actually medium and small enterprises, and they do not sometimes have the capacity to also undertake necessary certifications to meet the new regulations. So there is also, with regard to also this ambition of becoming the global manufacturing hub, there are a couple of schemes in India for developing mega integrated textile regions. And there are also schemes for capacity development, for handloom and handicraft development, and for technical textiles. And the government right now is saying that it will follow this 5F formula. Basically, it will try to work from farm to fiber to factory to fashion to foreign market. That is what it is aiming to do. And there is a huge budget outlay for the upcoming mega integrated parks. And it is up to 4,445 crores. And all this budget will be spent over 7 years. And it will be spent in both greenfield and brownfield sites, both in current textile clusters, for example, in Tamil Nadu and Gujarat and Maharashtra, but also in some of the new clusters. So Telangana, Karnataka, Uttar Pradesh, there is existing industry in these sectors already, these states already. And there is also a huge support to the textile industry through subsidies and rebate on taxes. It's very common for people to use clothes for a very long time, to use a lot of handicrafts and handloom, because there is a rich tradition of handloom in the country, and to also pass down or share with family and friends. However, thrifting through portals and platforms is not something that is so easily adopted currently. There is a lot of industry initiative as well. So at least in the large corporations and big companies, there is ongoing innovation, and basis their consumers or their partners, they are able to innovate and either supply sustainable materials or also supply fast fashion. So there is definitely innovation at the level of material design and business models. At a more systemic and ecosystem level, of course, there are regulations for air, water, and soil pollution. There are around 60 voluntary sustainability standards for the garment sector. Also, textile is one of the sectors as part of the National Action Plan on Climate Change.
And so in the textile sector, we also have the Bureau of Energy Efficiency's Perform, Achieve and Trade Scheme for decarbonization and climate change mitigation. Something that has actually happened over the last 1.5-2 years is that Ministry of Textiles has constituted an ESG task force. And after some of the meetings, some of the working group meetings, they have also come up with a Sustainable Bharat Mission for Textiles. The Sustainable Bharat Mission for Textiles has as its main aims as it wants to incentivize resource use efficiency, because the MSME sector particularly is not very water use efficient or energy efficient. And so there is, due to the NDCs of India, there is also, you know, an aim to increase water use efficiency by 20% by 2030 and also reduce emission in intensity in the sector. However, there is a huge challenge because a lot of industry that needs to sort of modernize and shift is in the MSME sector. So the ministry is also envisaging how to support the sector through, you know, better technologies, through recycling technologies, providing information of use of alternate materials and chemicals and digital printing, and also to incentivize water audits by subsidizing them or by providing handholding support. Then there is also focus on setting up of recycling hubs. So India also has some of the recycling hubs. Actually, one of the Asia's largest recycling hub is in India, in Panipat, and which hosts 150 to 200 micro to medium sized entities. And it processes both post-consumer and post-industrial waste. Something that is also regularly pointed out in the cluster in Panipat and all the other recycling clusters is that to also continue to manage that recycling waste that is imported and that is locally sourced, there is a need to also set up more, you know, stabilized value chains, basically. So there is a focus on development of textile recovery facilities in cities that have population of over 75 million. And so this is also starting. There are also already some of the textile recovery facilities that are existing. But the value chain development from textile recovery facilities to these recycling hubs is something that will need to be done. And there is also a question of how to make these textile recovery facilities feasible and sustainable in the long mm-hmm. run, because we have, at least with the material recovery facility, we also have the challenge that while if a scheme or if a program is supporting the development of a particular facility, after that scheme phases out, the facility sometimes turn into disuse. So there is that. And because there is this great ambition to export so much, there is also a thought around how to develop new materials. So there is also thought around Center of Excellence for Textile Technology, and where they want to also look at development of resource efficient technologies, recycling and resource recovery technologies, creation of traceable and integrated supply chain platforms, development of biodegradable fibers, development of biodegradable synthetic fibers, eco-friendly dyes, chemicals and finishing agents. So there is also a focus around that, and also development of standard for circular textiles. So that is also planned. And to manage all this knowledge, there is also focus around knowledge management portals mm-hmm. where they will also look at skill development and capacity building and worker welfare and social responsibility. And lastly, the mission also focuses on innovation and startup excellence to try and incubate the startups, the innovators currently in the country, and as well as look at traceability and data availability. So this is the current sort of policy regulatory landscape in India. And it is still evolving. And I think because the mission just came out this year, mm-hmm. We will have to see how this mission performs. So, but there is a lot of energy. There's a lot of convening of different actors and stakeholders and seeing who can do what and how it can be done. So, yeah, so that is the development.
Well, a couple of things. We have been working on several issues here in Colombia with a couple of partners, led exemplary by GIZ. And some other partners from the national government, Ministry of Environment, Ministry of Commerce as well, and Trade, and some other partners and allies that are, let's say, pushing the agenda towards EPR, and especially on textiles. Nowadays, there is no policy that exists in Colombia that is, let's say, focusing on EPR. just on textiles. There is an EPR schemes in Colombia. There are around 11 or 12 materials that are covered by EPR since 10 years ago. So we are leading this circular economy initiatives here in Colombia, but rather in textiles, it's a bit more complicated. So the idea is that we from the private sector, we decided also to, let's say, start piloting this initiative on EPR on a voluntary basis, in which normally EPR are composed in some other countries between, or it is a mixture of governments and regions and cities and some other actors in the process. But here, let's say, there's not a single EPR scheme in Colombia for, let's say, plastics or let's say for batteries. Let's say there are several hundreds of them. So it's a bit more complicated because there's a fragmentation of several initiatives and not all of them are, let's say, on the same quality level. And also the idea is that we try to do our best. And from Andy, of course, the idea is that with the companies, the idea is to start piloting the next couple of months to see whether this is feasible, not only focusing on reuse and recycling and focusing on a specific materials, because this is some already complicated. Some cities that are going to be covered is Bogota and Medellin. These are the biggest cities in Colombia and the ones who are, let's say, are concentrating the numbers rather than in consumption and even in production. And the idea is also to use this experience for some of the companies, let's say, that are existing in Colombia, to use their infrastructure and, let's say, some background experiences as well in order to, let's say, create this EPR scheme on a voluntary basis. And also, we have this National Textile Circularity Roundtable with some other partners as well, in which the idea is to include not only the studies and the consultancies that we are doing from baseline, because there was no baseline here in Colombia for textiles. We have it already in our first example of it. Then we did also a study on reuse and secondhand, and there are wonderful outcomes and wonderful results, especially on the perception and how this secondhand feeling and sentiment grows really inwards, because this is really cultural. Say, for instance, this cultural dimension about secondhand usage goes and it is really linked, let's say, with energy and, let's say, and the perception that they think that the secondhand clothing are, let's say, rather dirty, you know. So yeah, this is a really cultural perception. This is really interesting to see. And one of the things also that we found is it's about energy, you know, because this is really comes directly from a cultural perception. So this is something that we're trying to change, especially from the business perspective. And also the idea is that we are doing also in terms of equipment and protective clothing to analyze with several companies what to do afterwards, especially for remanufacture and especially to recycle fiber to fiber. And also a bit more complicated, and especially in Colombia, because this macroeconomic crisis is hitting especially the manufacturing and textile sector. So the resources are coming from GIZ also, but also from the companies. And this is rather complicated to trigger this initiative and start. But, you know, this is not a perfect model, but the idea is to start and to start to implement and to see and comes with the implementation, the how do we, let's say, learn from experience, and then how do we, let's say, integrate some more actors in the process. And the idea is to use this as a template for some other countries, especially for multinationals who have some other commitments, let's say, in the European Union. And let's say they try to bring this experience and, let's say, try to bring what this is prerequisite under their jurisdiction in Europe and try to implement it here in Colombia and some other countries. So this is something that we are doing, and I'm happy to share it with you guys, with the audience as well, in order to see, okay, any suggestions, any input is really welcome. And of course, as a general basis, the idea is also to send a signal also for the policy agenda and also for the ministries in order to evaluate, okay, this is something, this is primary information. Do not start to, let's say, structure from scratch any policy initiative on textiles, because this is something that we're trying to do from experience. And this is something that, of course, we need also the muscle from the companies, also the muscle from the ministries, also the muscle from the civil society, and also the muscle and the mindset from the consumer. Because this is something that we're trying to change also with this initiative, also with some different events nationwide, in order just to realize and also try to change this really pragmatic view of what the textiles and the secondhand is coming into effect here in Colombia.
I'm working for a Latvian NGO, Green Liberty, but currently I'm a Fulbright scholar here in Washington, hosted by the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. So it's 10 o'clock here and very different setting. And I am actually here to study the circular economy and textiles in America. And when earlier Valerie was saying that in Europe, on average, one person discards around 16 kilos of textiles in a year, then in America, the number is 47 kilos. Okay, so I'm digging in it from this European perspective and seeing the differences in policies and approaches, but of course, as well, the consumer culture. But let me stick to what I prepared, and I will focus only on EPR in Latvia, because as Valerie also rightly said and showed in a lovely map where my country was highlighted, Latvia became the fourth EU country in July this year to introduce EPR for textiles after France, Netherlands and Hungary. So I just focus on that. And I also am mindful that in 20 minutes, this event should end, right, Clara? So we keep to the timeline. So the EPR for textiles in Latvia was basically not designed with an ambition to create something innovative so that other countries would get inspired and try to copy paste it, but basically just to take care of the very, very basics, which our earlier speakers also noted, which is that the producers, the polluters, pay a share in the system to ensure that the textiles are collected when they are discarded. So Latvia introduced this compulsory separate collection of textile waste in January last year, so 2023. So an EPR policy for textiles was needed to basically finally get someone, us as consumers, and of course via producers, to pay for this system. Otherwise, there would be a risk that the general waste management fees would go up, disregarding if a person actually throws away textiles or not. Okay, so it would be not fair. So that's why Latvia just went for the bare minimum to do, this task to get the polluters start paying. And when we talk about polluters, we mean manufacturers, importers, and distributors of textiles. And in Latvia's case, the policy applies for all textile products. So it does not exclude secondhand products and secondhand imported products in this question. So all these products are to pay natural resources tax, which is 50 euro cents per kilogram or 500 euros per ton. The responsibility for the manufacturer starts as of the first kilogram. That will surely be changed, but at this point it is like it is. So even the smallest of the distributors needs to start paying in the system. Exemption is from this natural resources tax if you pay in an EPR scheme. So basically paying for an EPR operator, the fee is smaller than the natural resources tax, like in all the other EPR schemes. Or the manufacturer can, for example, have its own textile waste management system. And then, of course, they are not having to pay it. So they're taking care of it themselves. In comparison to EU upcoming rules, Latvia actually does have performance targets for EPRs. So at least 20% of textile goods annually placed on the Latvian market should be prepared for reuse, recycling and recovery this year. And the percentages increased to 25% in 2026. EPR operators have to cooperate with partners that are preparing the products for reuse, recycling, recovery. They also need to provide data. I totally agree with Valerie. Very, very important. I've been trying to, interview people, stakeholders in the value chain, trying to get a picture on what actually happens with the textiles in Latvia. Now, part of that job will be done due to the reports that the manufacturers, the producers, the distributors will need to give either to the EPR operators or to the institutions. And we will get a much better understanding on what actually comes in, goes out, and what is done with the textiles. Very special issue, which Clara, you know about, is earlier speakers also mentioned this consumption of secondhand and that it's not popular, or it's something that some countries and societies struggle with for many, many reasons. Latvia stands out in this context because actually in Latvia, 1/3, so 30% of the consumption of textile products is secondhand. So it is very popular. The secondhand product stores, if you go in certain parts, in smaller towns in Latvia, you will not even have a normal store in the sense normal, where you get conventional new products. You only have secondhand stores, large chains that have taken over these smaller towns. And also in Riga, if you go in the capital, there are parts where you're basically just seeing these stores. It's very, very popular for various reasons, including the prices being more democratic, the quality often actually being better because the textiles have been produced decades earlier and therefore they have higher standards. The fast fashion has also lowered the standards for some of these textiles, right? But also for young people, it's very, very popular to go into these secondhand stores. So in Latvia's case, this secondhand textile import and this EPR policy was a large debate because this was the question of whether we should apply this to the secondhand imports given this large consumption and also, I mean, the overall waste hierarchy where you should actually support reuse instead of pushing it into a new tax. So also there was a civic legislative initiative where over 7,000 Latvian citizens with verified signatures asked that we should not apply this EPR to secondhand textiles. So if it reaches this initiative, reaches 10,000, then the parliament will have to hear this issue out. But let's see if they go there. But as you well know, EU ministers also debated this issue. Latvia also put forward its argument saying that 1/3 of the consumption is actually secondhand. So we cannot just close our eyes and say that this collection is going to be paid by someone else. So in the end, the EU ministers also agreed to a compromise that member states are allowed to also introduce fees for imported secondhand textiles, but they should be lower than for new products. Reminding of what I said in the beginning, in Latvia's case, all products right now have the same fees, but there is a commitment to introduce harmonized EU criteria, of course, when they come, including eco-modulation, lower costs for secondhand importers and exceptions also for smaller enterprises. Final thing on the effects, of course, far too early to say. It's been 3 months since the introduction of it. So first data on how these polluters, manufacturers are doing will come in early next year for the second half of this year. But certainly the first effect is that there is increased awareness among the textile circularity value chain as well as the consumers about the need to actually separately collect textiles and also have someone to pay for it, that it's not a voluntary activity that someone will take care for. And also this just the needed solutions for increased circularity. And I have also heard that some companies were preparing in advance, asking institutions that it is, for example, totally okay to buy in huge piles of secondhand textiles prior to 1st of July and then put them on the market later and not pay taxes if they were bought in earlier, you know? Mm-hmm. So there were these companies that were worried and were preparing for it. But yeah, it's far too early to say whether actually it has any effect on these other factors that we would like to see, more collection, more recycling. But as I said in the beginning, with regard to reuse, Latvia is not the country to worry about. We already have 1/3. And we might have ideas for other countries how to actually facilitate that.
Ja, ich nehme einiges mit aus diesem spannenden Forum und freue mich jetzt schon sehr auf unser Abschlussforum am 5. November in Berlin. Ist ja gar nicht mehr so lange hin. Da geht es dann nochmal um den Gesamtblick, also um Geschäftsmodelle und die Frage, wie wir die Menschen bei der Circular Economy mitnehmen können. Dafür könnt ihr euch immer noch anmelden auf www.öko.de/Wissenschaftsforum2024. Das war der letzte Teil unserer Spezialfolgen zum Wissenschaftsforum Circular Economy. Gebt uns sehr gerne Feedback zu diesem Sonderformat. Wie fandet ihr es? Schreibt uns unter podcast@öko.de. Dort könnt ihr natürlich auch euch sowieso immer mit Fragen und Anregungen wenden. Und wir steigen jetzt ein in die letzten Vorbereitungen des Forums und freuen uns sehr, wenn wir euch im November in Berlin sehen. Und ganz regulär hier bei Wenden bitte hören wir uns zu einer nächsten Folge und steigen auch da nochmal tiefer in das Thema Kunststoffe ein. Bis dahin, macht's gut, tschüss.
Wenden bitte, der Podcast zu Wissenschaft und nachhaltigen Transformationen.